Hi, welcome to episode 3783 of the podcast, and this show's on one of my favorite subjects. It's also why I thought really long and hard before deciding to do it, because the next couple months will not have a ton of fishing in it for me, and we're going to be talking about fishing. And you can catch catfish year-round in Texas, you really can, all but the absolute coldest days, but this is not the prime time of the year, and over the next couple, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that's going to become even more true that it's not prime time, and it'll be going into March as things begin to come up the other side of the slope, and that's what we're going to be talking about today is catfishing. So why are we doing it all? Because I'm going to get myself all excited and want to go fishing, and you know, I'll have a few trips here and there over the next few months at best, and then it'll go back to normal. Well, because it's what's on my mind, and I had somebody recently, a good friend of mine, that we were having a text chat by, and we were talking about different things with catfishing, and I was giving him some advice, and there were some things he had just never heard of, and I'm like, yeah, well, maybe and this guy listens, right? I'm like, well, if this guy doesn't know this, then maybe I didn't cover it before, or maybe it's been a long time, and it's just time to talk about it. And the other thing is, there's a lot of serious shit going on in the world right now, and sometimes it's good to just talk about things that are kind of fun that also apply to like a sustainable regenerative lifestyle, that apply to a healthy lifestyle, that apply to preparedness, because knowing how to gather food is a huge part of preparedness. How to lower cost is a big part of preparedness in this modern age. And catfish are probably the fish that can have the biggest positive impact on a person economically in 2025. Now, depending on where you live, if you live where you can walk across the street and fish in the ocean, that changes, right? But when you talk about like 90% of the population of this country probably lives where they are a short car drive away at most. Many people could get on a bike and do this from a place where they can catch catfish. And catfish, despite, and we'll go into this a little bit today, some of the mythology about them, are a just an exceptional eating fish in all species, really. The only thing that prevents a catfish from being a good eating fish is the water quality itself being dangerous or just flat out nasty, because they can survive in some places that other fish cannot, or the fish being handled improperly, or it's just too small. At least of species of catfish that live in the United States. I can't guarantee you that's true of all the species of catfish that live in Thailand or the Philippines or, you know, Jebuhu or wherever the hell they are. But in the United States, we have, and we're going to cover today, pretty much we have four species of catfish that are pursued in freshwater by anglers for the purpose of food. And technically, we have more than that, because the bullhead, there's three. And then technically, there's a hybrid blue channel. But it's blue cats, channel cats, flathead catfish, and bullhead catfish. And all of them are delicious. And none of them eat mud or poop or whatever else nonsense you've heard. And none of them are complicated to clean. We're going to cover that today. All of them are easy to cook. It's just a great high-quality fish. And we're going to go through a lot of reasons today. They belong at least on your radar of potential food sources in a tough situation. And remember, we don't only prepare for a tough situation for everybody, we prepare for tough situations for ourselves. And being able to, you know, put a couple of meals on the table a week, maybe, for a lot of people would be a big difference economically, especially during that pinch point. And if you're unemployed and got nothing else to do, why not go catch some fish? Anyway, with all of that in mind, we're going to dig into it in just a minute. Let's start off with our sponsors of the day. And our sponsor of the day, number one today, is going to be, in just a second, here we go, Start9 Sovereign Computing. If you want to take back your technology, if you want to have complete privacy, if you want to stop using the cloud, which is just a fancy name for somebody else's computer, it's not up there like a certain dingbat told you, then you want to take a look at Start9. You can run your own Bitcoin node. If you're going to go further, even you can run your own Lightning node, attach your own wallet, so have complete control over your Bitcoin beyond just having something like a cold wallet. You can even run BT Pay Server and you collect your own payments on your own website completely independently of any third party whatsoever. You could have end-to-end encrypted messaging between you and anybody that you let in, and a whole lot more. If you can use a smartphone and install and configure apps, you can use Start9, and they'll even help get you up to speed when you make your purchase. They also do a discount of 9% for MSB members, and you can stack discounts because they also do sell gift cards on Fold where you can get additional discounts when you buy those cards, and you can even stack Bitcoin while you're doing it. So it's a pretty damn good deal. Next up today is KnifeKits.com, where, you know, they're a company that does what they say and say what they do, which is something I teach people to do from a marketing perspective all the time. KnifeKits.com does exactly what it says. You can buy kits there to make your own knives, to build your own knives, and you can do that in a way that's kind of like if you think back to when you're a kid in high school and building a model, like a model airplane or car, where you kind of have all the parts and you're kind of assembling and doing the final parts of the job. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar, up to buying your own individual components and doing your own bladesmithing and everything else. From the brand new person to the pro, KnifeKits is a great source. They do a discount for MSB members as well. And, you know, how cool would it be to pick up a couple kits and, you know, build them with your kids or your grandkids or something like that and create a family heirloom, even if it ain't perfect? With that, let's kind of get on into this topic today again on catfishing. And what actually started this out was I had a conversation with a guy named Thad. He's a good friend of mine. And we were talking, and we'll talk more about these later. We're talking about these things called range cubes. And even though they're called cubes, they're not very cube-like, are they? And I just started going into a bunch of stuff that I know about catfishing. And I'm like, man, I think I've covered all this stuff on shows before, because we've done a lot of shows over the years on fishing, ditch fishing. I even did a show completely dedicated to nothing but bullheads. We've done how to find locations, small water, big water. You know, it ain't like we do one a week or even one a month, but over 18 years, we've done a lot. I'm like, man, there's a lot of stuff that, he doesn't know that I do. And not super secret squirrel stuff either, like pretty generalized knowledge. And this guy fishes a lot. And so I'm like, oh man, it'd be a good show to do. But let's start off with just in general, how important is it for us to find and use local resources in general, especially food? I think it's really important, and I think that it's something that grounds us a lot more to value where we live as well. One of the few things I miss about when I was a kid growing up in Pennsylvania was the community nature of utilizing various forms of what you would consider a public resource. Things like we'd go up on the mountain where the county controlled the land, anybody could go there, and we would pick berries. I went fishing a lot when I was a kid, and there were times when I was kind of getting out of doing chores and shit, and it was fine. And this is God honest truth. You know, my grandma was like, that's fine, but you better, if you're going fishing, you should bring some fish home for the freezer or for the table. Like, I was expected, if I'm taking that time away, to go do that and going out and fishing with uncles and great uncles and grandfathers and things like that, and doing it in a way that actually contributed to the family. You know, when you're a 13, 14 year old kid and you can come home, clean fish, and, you know, either that week or maybe months later, if they come out of the freezer, and you sit down to a meal with family, and what's feeding your family is something you did, especially like, you know, you got vegetables from the garden, fish from the creek, maybe a deer chop that is from the deer you shot. It's a sense of accomplishment. And I'm going to tell you, especially with young men, I think it's a big part of what we've lost in our country. And I know this wasn't even really what I wanted to talk about at all today. But when I think about all the problems that we have, and we have all these young men that have no sense of what it is to be a man. And part of being a man to me has always been, you know, you have some responsibilities, especially once you become a father or a husband. And one of those is roof overhead and food on table. And the earlier we can start having our young men contribute at least some small portion of that to their own families when they're children still, and going through that adolescent phase, I just think the better the transition we're going to get. So Just feel inspired to throw that in for you today. If you found this video today and you're waiting for pictures or videos of me fishing or something like that, I'm not a clickbait guy. It's not what I do. This is a podcast. We're going to talk about fishing today. We will have some visual aids and bring some screens up and all, but this is not going to be like, hey, go watch us catch a bunch of fish. We're going to talk about it in a way that hopefully will help you figure out what resources you have and begin to catch more fish for yourself. All right. Now, here's some great things about catfish in particular as a resource. Number one would be they're found in some amount, and just about all freshwater in the United States is fishable. You know, if there's not catfish in there, there's probably not anything else in there. Now, there's exceptions to that. I used to fish some fairly remote walk-in mountain streams for brook trout in Pennsylvania when I was a kid. I mean, you had to hike in and you couldn't get there. There were not really any catfish, not any eaten catfish. There might have these little things called stone cats we used to use for bait, but that was about it. But, you know, 90% of the water that's near 90% of the people in this country that people fish has catfish in it. So they're just widely available. Again, they're great tasting no matter what the willfully ignorant say. They live in the mud. No, they don't. They eat their own shit. You can't eat your own shit and live. There's something called entropy of energy, and it doesn't fucking work that way. That's the dumbest damn thing I've ever heard in my life. I think some of that comes from some things that kind of look like they eat poop to a degree in some certain situations. Like, you know, I said that catfish is not great right now in Texas, but it'll be coming up in March. Well, part of that is what happens in March is the cormorants come through and they start roosting and they'll go to these bridges and all and they shit in the water. And then people go fish for those catfish and they catch lots of catfish. But what's really going on there is a whole food chain thing, because, you know, you're not catching, you know, big old blue or channel cat that's 15, 20 pounds or more that's living on cormorant poop. What's happened is that cormorant waste is bringing in plankton. The plankton's bringing in bait fish, and that's creating a bait fish edge along those areas, and it's bringing those catfish in to feed on, you know, things more like shad. That's what's more going on there, okay? They are a great-tasting fish, and I've eaten catfish of just about every type that you can get your hands on in the United States with a rod and reel. And I'm talking bullheads, brown, yellow, and black, channels, flatheads, you name it. And I'm even talking about, you know, the dreaded hardhead saltwater catfish, just supposedly awful. I've cooked those things alongside high dollar fish. And I mean like mahi and trout and mangrove snapper and, you know, done a little flight of different fish and not told people what they were eating. And by and large, most people would pick even the hardhead catfish. So they're just great eating. We'll talk about some ways to cook them today. Also, one of the most important things that we can get into our body is good and healthy fats. By the way, I'm not going to talk about this much today. Maybe tomorrow. Robert Kennedy Jr., head of HHS, now under Trump, just released the new food pyramid, turned it upside down, and made the number one food group in it protein and high quality fats. And then next to that is vegetables. We've needed that for a long time, but we need high quality fats. And it's one of the harder things to come across in nature. Protein's pretty easy. Carbohydrates are relatively easy. Fat is difficult in a lot of situations to come by with nature. And catfish is not like super high in fat. Don't get me wrong, but you're looking in the neighborhood of 7%, and really well fed, you're looking more like 9% fat in catfish. And that's why when we cook catfish on a grill, for instance, and we'll see fat render out of it, that's why we see that happen, because it's there in the first place. You know, there's fish with more, like, lake whitefish is like 13% or something like that. But when it comes to freshwater fish, and even most of the fish that will tell you, you know, lake trout have pretty high fat as well. They're more like a salmon species than a trout species, in my opinion. But, you know, fish that have really high fat are generally salt water. So when you get, you know, over 5% fat in a freshwater fish, you've got a high quality fatty fish. And Brian here from Facebook says bacon. And I don't know if he's talking about just bacon in general or adding fat with bacon. Absolutely. Like what you cook your food with has a lot to do with that as well. But it's nice that you can actually get fat directly from the protein. And we'll talk about grilling catfish today. It's way underutilized, a great way to cook them. They can cook many ways beyond breaded and fried. Many ways. Grilled. They can be steaked out and grilled. They can be made into curries. We'll talk about all of that in a bit. There's high limits. I don't know what it is where you are. You have to. Everything I say today is going to be mostly based on Texas law. And that may be way more liberal or way more conservative in the true meaning of the words, not politically, where you live. Like there's things you can do in Texas that will put you in the jail if you're, you know, in Pennsylvania. But if you're in Louisiana, there's things that you can do that put you in the jail that won't, that will not, you can do them in Louisiana and it's fine. You try them in Texas, will put you in the jail. I'll tell you about one of those ways in a bit. And then if I don't forget, I'll try to, because I meant to find this video when I was putting the show together and I didn't. When I talk about trot lines and limb lines and stuff, I'll talk about this other method. Totally legal in Louisiana, completely illegal in Texas. And it's really, really effective too, by the way. And there's no bait and no hooks. And it's not even really a trap. And yet it's illegal in Texas and it's legal in Louisiana. It's a really cool method I'll talk about. It only works during the spawning season, though. Yeah. But yet it actually helps with reproduction at the same time you're harvesting adults. It's crazy. Hold on. I'll get to it. But no one really gets in a wad when you take a limited catfish home. In Texas, I would say 25 per angler. And if you're like camping overnight, like a field possession limit is 50 a day per angler of channel cats and blues. A flathead is a little bit different and different size restrictions and stuff like that. And the bullheads are completely unlimited. And there are people, because I'm on FishBrain, which is a pretty cool app for your smartphone. But I'm on FishBrain and I do see people like with a stringer full of bullheads, like you didn't even let them grow up. And these fish are all like 12 inches and they're from a park pond. And that's like about, you might get some big bullheads in there. That's pretty average for a good size keeper. And when we get to these different species, I'll tell you that in general, those fish are overpopulated. Those are fucking fisherman Karens. I'm not worried about them, but you know, it's not like you have the bass police, like where there's thousands and thousands that get upset because somebody caught a largemouth bass. Even though there's lakes in Texas where they're like, please keep the little ones because there's too many of them. And they don't understand that either. But in general, there's a reason there's a limit that's so high in catfish, just because they have such high survival rates as young fish, and it's because their population just is not in any danger whatsoever. And so you can keep them, and in general, nobody gets in a wad that you do. They have really high reproductive rates, and I'm not just talking about the number of eggs. I'm talking about the number of eggs that become babies, the number of babies that become adolescents. And like I said, when we get into talking about like park ponds and stuff, I'm explaining to you how that can actually become a problem if they're not harvested. And in many instances, they are overstocked, which means you're doing a freaking favor to the ecosystem by culling some of these damn fish out. Like I said, it'll make real sense as we get into the different species. I want to give you just a little bit on the species. I'm not going to get deeply into how to target individual species today. This is more just a general discussion overview, make you aware so you can figure out what's in your area and develop your own targeting system for those fish. Let's start off with kind of like probably the highest table quality out of the four. Certainly the biggest species with highest potential large size. And a really big footprint throughout the United States. But this is generally speaking a lake fish, like lakes that you would put boats on. You will find these guys some in park ponds and stuff like that, but their size is going to be inherently limited by the food supply that's in there. It's the blue catfish. And again, it is considered the best eating by many. I've eaten channel and I've eaten blue right next to each other. And I've had people swear to God the blue catfish is better. And I just don't really see much of a difference myself. I can visually see the difference. Channel is usually a little more yellow. That's usually indicative of a higher fat content, which I like. But when you're actually cooked with either one, I don't get much difference. Maybe a little bit of an edge there. All right. If you want to be a sommelier of catfish, I guess. They are, and this is true of them and flatheads in general, hardcore predators. You might pick up blue cat, even bigger ones, on a cut bait. You might pick them up on a piece of shrimp or something, a chicken liver or whatever. But, you know, they are a predator fish. In fact, all catfish are predators. They're just what, like, you got like a predator scavenger in almost all fish, by the way, but with, you know, different variants of ratio. And blue cats are way to the predator side. I've caught a lot of blue cats, not like a lot in one day, but I mean, spotty here and there and across the board, fishing for white bass and stripers using slabs, like heavy spoons that you're just vertically jigging over a school in deep water, over a hump or something like that, or doing a cast and flutter retrieve where these white bass are. And all of a sudden you get slammed, like white bass are just not that big. You get slammed by something like that's, you know, starts pulling drag and shit. Like, and you're on a lake where there aren't stripers. You kind of know right away it's a catfish. And sometimes it'll be a channel, but more often than not, it's a blue cat. Because that, if there's a lot of shad in the area and there's a lot of white bass or other game fish in that area going after those shad, those blue cats want that same food supply. And so you want to move more toward your live shad and other live bait when you're targeting blue cats. So they also like small catfish. Just say, we'll talk about that more when we get to flatheads here in a minute. Unless they're specifically stocked by like the state, the park system, whatever, private ponds or whatever, they're mostly a big water fish. Because they're so shad oriented. That's what they want. To the point where we have a lake that I used to fish all the time years ago, before I was even doing the show, called Joe Pool. It's about an hour and a half away from me where I lived at the time. It was literally my backyard. And the state has never, at least with announcement, put blue cats in the lake. And when asked the Texas Parks and Wildlife why that lake doesn't have blue cats, they said that because of that lake, its total ecosystem and what have you, the size of the shad in that lake, that it was a much better candidate to develop as a channel catfish fishery than a blue cat fishery. There's lots of shad there. They're just small relative to other lakes in the state. So that's how much these are a predator dialed in on shad. And that should tell you about, you know, what to do to catch them and where to look for them. When I say they're the biggest species in North America, there's a lot of exaggeration. 500 pound catfish. Now, my daddy caught, no, he didn't. The world record blue cat, which is the largest catfish caught in North America. And I don't know, maybe somebody imported a Mekong Delta catfish in South Florida or something. Other than that, native species, blue catfish, 143 pounds. Friends and neighbors, that is a big enough effing fish that one need not exaggerate their maximum size. A 100-plus pound fish is a big fish anywhere. And that means when you are targeting them, you need to if you're targeting blue cats and you're on the kind of water that has blue cats, you're probably on the kind of water that also has like hybrids and stripers and maybe flatheads. You need to gear up for that. We're talking like medium, heavy action, ugly sticks at a minimum when we're targeting fish like that. Same with flatheads when we get there. These are bruiser fish where you can be targeting channels, and yeah, they get, we'll get to how big they get here in a second. But it's very common when you're targeting channels to not see a fish over 24 inches. When you're targeting blues, if you know what you're doing, you're going to see some bigger fish. It is going to happen, right? Yeah, the car-sized catfish when building the Hoover Dam and all that. So many freaking urban stupid legends and nonsense. And everybody that came from a place, you know, that they had like this county water dam, you know, out of fishing. Well, way back in the 1960s, they were concerned about flooding, and they sent the divers down there to check the dam, and they saw catfish. Just shut up. None of that's true. 143 pounds, a big freaking fish. And blue cats have size limit regulations. They have to be over a certain size and quantity limits in just about anywhere I know of. Like, again, you need to check your own stuff. In Texas, they're exactly the same limits as channel cats. It's 25 combined channel and blue or hybrids thereof total per day per angler, which is a very generous limit. But what you'll also see is some states, like Texas has like on channel cats, blue cats, only 10 that exceed 20 inches in length. It's kind of like a partial slot limit. So you can keep more small ones, but less bigger ones, because they want those bigger fish to go back into the water. Channel cats, let's move on to channel cats. They often take live bait. But and the bigger they are, the more that becomes true. Channel cats are, again, they're all predators. But I've caught plenty of channel cats on lures. An animal that is exclusively a scavenger is not hitting a 1 1/4 ounce slab being bounced off of a hump 22 feet in the water. That is not what's happening there. And I've caught channels like that. The biggest channel cats I've ever caught, I've caught on bluegills about the size of my hand. Okay? Like big bobber, 5 foot deep in about 10 foot of water right at sundown. So now we're not even on the bottom, even though that's a good strategy in targeting them. When they get really active, like midsummer, and they're moving around, and that fish is struggling because it's alive and it's being dangled off a float that's too big for it to pull under. Catfish have a lateral line a lot like a shark does. They can sense that. They don't have anywhere near the sensitivity level of a shark. But when they're cruising around, that animal's panicking, much like largemouth bass have that lateral line as well. And it's as a predator, it knows, hey, this thing's in some sort of trouble. And that's like ringing a dinner bell. So while all the stink baits, all the cut baits, all the prepared baits, all of that stuff works for them, they're predators as well. And don't forget it, because your bigger ones you want to target, that's what you're looking for. The biggest one my uncle ever caught was something like 31 pounds. And that's big. When you hear what the world record is, that's pretty damn big. And he caught it on like a sucker, like a chub sucker. Like he was catching bait in the creek with a sign net. And he ended up with one. It was about like a 7-inch, creek sucker. And he threw it in the bait bucket with the rest. And we were out at a lake called Tuscarora. I bet you if he would have reported it, it's probably a lake record. It was a little over 30 pounds. And it slammed that big-ass freaking sucker. So they are definitely predators as well. But they love to take cut and stink baits. And there's a punch bait. A punch bait, you always use a treble hook, and they call it a punch bait. It'll come in a tub, and you take a stick, and you push it down in it because the stuff stinks. And you pull it out on an angle, and it just got like a clump on that treble hook. And I've caught buttloads of channel cats using that Danny King's bait, and there's other options. So prepared baits, cut baits, stink baits, all of it works. They're also relatively easy to chum, and they are easy to find in some seasonal cycles. I'm sure that's true of blues as well, but I've never really targeted blues heavily. The lakes I fished when I had a boat didn't really have a lot of them. And as a bank fisherman, I target channels a lot more. My number one chum that I use on channel cats and bullheads is right here in my hand. If you're on the video, that's called a range tube. These are made out of cottonseed meal. They're for feeding cattle. And you want to, I believe it's 18% is your minimum because they have them rated in how much protein is in them. I think it's 18% is the minimum. And you want that because if they're less, because they do make some that are less than that, they won't sink reliably. Once they're over 18% protein, they're dense enough that they sink. when these things hit the bottom, they slowly break apart, and the smell and the taste is very attractive to catfish. Now, I've actually kept channels and bullheads in fish tanks and thrown little pieces, because that's an awful lot to put in a fish tank. Thrown little pieces of this in there, and it's very interesting to me. They eat a little bit of it. They chew on it a lot. They basically make a mess out of it. It really attracts them. It really gets them going, but they don't really pig out on eating it. It is more a bring them in type of situation, which is good because then they don't fill up on it. I will take like a 1 gallon Ziploc bag of these. Again, channels or bullheads both. And I will throw it into the general area, kind of spread out that I'm fishing in. And I will outproduce people using the same bait and the same tactics just down the bank from me. So you do with that as you will. This is maybe not the best chum in the world, but it's clean. It doesn't stink. It's easy to use. Soured grain is nasty, and I'm not convinced it works that much better. But yeah, relatively easy to chum. Common in big and medium waters, but often stocked in small park ponds. I've caught 6-pound channel cats in a pond that's probably 3/4 of an acre. I call it the Karen Pond. It's down in White Rock, but it ain't White Settlement is the town. Little town, park pond in White Settlement. It's about a 15-minute drive for me. I've caught 6-pound channel cats out of it. Don't catch them regular. You usually catch bullheads, but I caught 1 6, and I caught a lot of channel cats in there, 3 to 4 pounds. When they stock them, they have some time to grow up before people take them out. They get fished out pretty hard because it's a small pond. But what I'm saying is you can find channel cats, everything from park ponds to big open water, to rivers, streams, everything in between. There's a creek about 10 minutes north of me, runs through a disc golf course, a public disc golf course, and you take some of those holes, chum them with this, and throw some limb lines out, and you can catch a lot of catfish while you're just farting around. It's really peaceful, and you're not having to sit there watching a rod. And that way you can set them out like snares and set out like 10 of them. And pretty quick, get your limit and be going home and dragging your Karen card, as I call it, across the golf course with people looking, what's he doing? It's pretty fun. The biggest overall channel cat ever caught, world record, recorded officially 53 pounds. That's still a big fish. That is a big fish. A 20-pound catfish is a big fish. A 12-pound catfish, we'll put a beating on a rod. But if you're doing chum, shrimp, or livers, or punch bait, it is very common to go all day and never see a channel catfish over 24 inches. So your light action, medium action rods, you know, 300 series, 400 series reels, different manufacturers like 4,500 or 4 or whatever. But those, Mitchell 300 size reels, fine for channel cats, unless you're targeting really big fish. Now, there's always a chance of something bigger showing up, and that's always fun when it does, but they are more like your everyday, like you're fishing for bass, as far as your gear size, not necessarily what tackle you're using. The best keepers that I found, just for being worth the time to process and not getting too big when you're doing like fryers or whatever, 16 to 24 inches. And that's going to run you 1.5 to 3.5 pounds. That's kind of catfish. They tend to, as they get over that 2-foot mark, each inch is a lot of girth. So you might have a 22-inch channel cat that's 3 pounds and a 26-inch channel cat that's like 6.25. But that 16 to 20, 24, that is prime cleaning cat size. If you like to steak catfish, and I do, I'm going to show you a picture of what that looks like, a staked out cat. This cat was about 7 pounds. And this is maybe half the meat off of it I'm about to show you if you're on the video. This is just a stop point in a video that actually had nothing to do with that catfish. It was about salted shrimp. And I'll have a link to the whole video in the video of the show notes for you today. But that's the steaks off of a 7-pound channel cat. And what I like about staking them, I'll talk about this more when we talk about cooking them. You don't even have to worry about skinning them, because when you cook them, the little bit of skin that's on the outside of the steak just peels right off. Really, really great. Golf for Prez says spinning reels, and that you can use bait casters or spinners. I use spinning reels mostly. I don't really like casting bait casters. The thumb on it and trying to, I mean, I can do it, but most of my reels are, you know, standard spinning reels, open face spinning reels, what I like. I would stay away from like Zepco type, spin cast or whatever they like, closed face push button reels with the bigger fish. I don't want to be sitting there with a Zepco 202 with a 14 pound channel cat on it. I just don't. I mean, I have fun if it happens, but I generally speak to open face reels. You have a lot more control with an open face reel about adjusting drag and things like that. The smallest of the big three, the big three, the flathead, the blue, and the channel, full, you know, roll record size is a 53 pound fish. I don't know that I've ever seen one much over 30 pounds. They exist, but I haven't seen many. I've seen a lot of over 30-pound blues and flatheads. It usually will have a size and quantity limit in most places as well. I don't know any place where, like, you can keep all the channel cats you want or there's no size limit. There may be some place. I'm not aware of it. I will tell you that in a lot of places it's 12 inches for your minimum, and I don't keep 12-inch channel cats. I won't even think about keeping a channel cat till it's about 14 to 15 inches. And I don't even measure them to determine that. I just kind of look at them. And the reason that I do that is a 12-inch bullhead, we'll get to bullheads here in a minute, is a pretty substantial chunk of meat. And they don't get, there's no such thing as a 30-pound bullhead. They're not going to grow up into that. And a bullhead has part of why they have a huge head relative to their body. So like a 20-inch bullhead is like half head. But a big stocky body. A 12-inch channel cat is like eel-like. They're just, to me, it's not worth the knife time for the amount of meat yield you get off a 12-inch channel cat. So I'm more looking for that 14, 16 inches, my bottom. You do what you want, but that's, in my experience, how they work, they work out. So I'm not even worried about the low end, but there's a quantity limit. And I'm betting in some states it's more like 6 instead of what's 25 here. So make sure you check that. And that might makes, you know, have some impact on what you target. If you have to keep less fish, you might target bigger fish. Where it's really nice when you can go out and you can throw 20, 25 of these things in the boat in an hour and a half. In that like 16 to 22 inch range. It's great. It's perfect eating size. Bullheads. I want to go flatheads next. Flatheads next, yeah. I would say the flathead catfish. Now, if you live where you don't have a lot of them or you don't know about them or they're just not where you live, what I'm about to say may not make sense, but I call it the most common big catfish in day-to-day catches. I don't mean that you can't catch more channels than flatheads and some big channels. What I mean is, when you see people showing pictures of 25, 30, 40, 50-pound fish, more often than it being a blue cat or a channel cat, it's a flathead. And that's because people that target flatheads, just by the very way that they target flatheads, are generally targeting bigger fish. As I said, one of the... I don't know what I was saying now. I'm just going to keep going because I have no idea what I was about to say right there. I was going to say bullheads. Bullheads are great bait for flatheads. So if you're targeting flatheads and you're using like 6, 8-inch bullheads for bait, you're not catching 14-inch flatheads. You see what I'm saying? It's like you're much more likely to be talking about substantial fish when you're targeting like bank cutouts on the Trinity River around here, for instance, for flatheads. You're just using bait, gear, and rigged up in a way that is targeting bigger fish. They're almost exclusively a predator as a mature adult. I've seen people catch some flatheads on cut bait and stuff, but they're usually more like, you know, 2-footers. They're smaller babies for a flathead. Flatheads get big, and they get big fast. And when I say like not as like maximum size is over 100 pounds. So I'm not saying they get to 100 pounds fast, but they get to 30 fast. They get to 30 fast because if it swims past them, they eat it. They're excellent predators. So we want to target them with live bait. They're common in lakes. They're a little bit harder to find in a lot of lakes that they're in. I was fishing one time for white bass and had a white bass on that was, you know, typical white bass, probably 12, 13 inch, little 1.5 pound fish or whatever. And all of a sudden I thought it was snagged and we're working it and trying to get it loose. And I was with a guy named Omar and he's like, give that to me. I can get it unsnagged. He goes, this is moving. What do you mean it's moving? He says, this is a fish on here. He handed it back to me. And sure enough, it was a flathead that had just gone to ground with it. And I was unable, eventually it took off and just snapped the line. And we were just outgunned by it. So they're in lakes, but most sophisticated flathead fishermen target them in rivers and larger creeks, and they love cutout banks and things like that. The Trinity River is lousy with them. There's tons of them in there. They are one of the fish that, again, really likes to eat its own species, not necessarily baby flathead, but likes to eat other catfish. I mean, they love to eat other catfish. They will eat channel catfish too, but in general, if a channel cat is big enough to keep legally, in a lot of places it's prohibited to be used as bait. It's considered a game fish, but you wouldn't want to use a catfish that already is big enough for you to eat as bait. But bullheads are a different story. They really like bullheads, and bullheads live a long damn time on a hook. Way longer than a shad or a bluegill or something like that. If you are targeting flatheads, you need bigger, heavier gear. I mean, you're talking like minimum 40-pound braid, good quality leaders, medium, heavy, ugly stick, that type of thing to target them. And they will also have size and quantity limits in most places. Bullheads. Bullheads are the one everybody mocks. Bullheads are the everyone says, you know, they taste like crap. They're mud cats. Stop it. Stop it. If half of what you say about them was true, their entire history wouldn't be what it is. There's places in the country where there's bullhead season and restaurants serve them. And they were a commercial fish in the United States for a period of time as well, before we got all sophisticated and artsy-fartsy in our ways. There are three target species in the bullhead world. They're black, yellow, and brown, and that is not really about the color of their flesh. Around here in this part of Texas, most black bullheads, people call them yellow bullheads because their skin's very yellow. It's the barbels. Those are the whiskers. That you're going to, it's the primary thing that you can look at to determine between a black and a yellow bullhead. And a yellow bullhead has a lighter colored whisker, kind of yellowy usually, but lighter colored, where a black bullhead will have black whiskers. So all these fish these people are catching around here and they're putting on a fish brain app and stuff like that. And they say yellow bullhead, black whiskers, that's a black bullhead. And that's led some people to claim that, well, yellow bullheads get really big. They get big, but they don't get as big as blacks. They just don't. They're a different species. But all three of them are targeted the same way. They occupy the same waters. Browns tend to actually be a little bit of the smaller end of the bullhead spectrum. And they tend to like clearer, like creeks and things like that than their cousins, the yellow and the black. But you find them all everywhere and you treat them all the same and they all act the same and you target them the same. The smallest catfish in the country targeted by anglers. Very common in park ponds and stuff like that. There are hundreds, thousands of them. 6 to 8 inches, bait stealing little pains in the asses. Slimy. This is why people hate them. They steal bait. You finally catch fish. Person doesn't know what they're doing. They get stabbed by the fin. It's the fin that stabs you, by the way, not the barb. They don't have stingers. They have pointy, sharp spines. Two that come out the side and one comes out the dorsal fin. And all you have to do to pick up a catfish right is put your fingers behind the side spines and over the dorsal and push the dorsal flat, or come belly side and be the same kind of grip. And it's not hard to do. I learned how to do it from a guy at an apartment complex pond when I was like 5 years old. If 5 year old Jack can do it, you can do it, folks. It's not that hard to get your hands on them the right way. I think they are highly underrated as a food fish. I really do. An ideal size for them is about 10 to 13 inches for harvesting for food. I'm going to show you a really cool way to clean them here in a second. I'm going to show you a piece of a quick video to do something called shucking bullheads. And this is actually, I've known how to do this a long time, but this is a new way that you get a little more meat off per fish. And you can be done in less than 30 seconds of fish. It's pretty cool. But when people say they eat mud, no, they don't. Again, when people say something like they eat their own poop, you can't, how long do you think you could live that way? Don't you need energy input to a living? This is so stupid. They're actually quite aggressive predators. I caught a bunch of like 3-4 inch ones one time and stuck them in a 40 gallon breeder out in my garage in a demo aquaponic system out there that I have. And by the end of the season, I took all the rocks out that I put. I found one. He was about 12 inches long. He got big enough to eat the smallest one, and that made him bigger, and he ate the next one up, and he just kept eating his brothers and sisters until he was the only one left in the tank. If they'll eat each other, they'll eat a shad. They'll eat a minnow. I'm telling you, they are predators. I also kept a bunch of them in a tank that they didn't eat each other in, I guess because I got them much more uniform in size. And this was an experiment that I did because I was catching these bullheads that were the color of a channel cat out of this one little pond in Arlington, little bitty mud pond. And I don't know what it was about that pond that made them turn silver, but they were silver. And whenever I would post a picture about them on a forum and all, this is 20 plus years ago, people always say, you know, you're calling, that's a channel cat. It has a square tail, bro, not a forked tail. It's a bullhead. So I put them all in this tank and was like, is this some kind of rare species of bullhead? And as soon as they went in that tank, the next day they were a little darker. And within about 3 weeks, their color went to what looked normal. And that was why I first put them in there. But I was feeding them fish food and stuff like that. Well, I would go down to the other, there's another pond. It was right down the road from my house with a dip net. And I'd come home with a couple hundred minnows, Gambusias, mosquito fish. And I would just throw them in that tank with and as soon as you threw them in that tank, you'd start hearing bloop, bloop, bloop. And again, everybody says they're a bottom feeder. They'd come up and they were taking those minnows off the top tier of the water. And it was like listening to popcorn go off for about 5 minutes and most of them would be gone. And then within the next couple of days, they would all be gone. So again, they are predators, but they're absolutely great scavengers as well. So they are both. I've caught them on little bluegills. I've caught them on minnows. I've caught bullhead on spinnerbaits. Like beetle spins is what we call them when we were kids, a little small spinnerbaits. I've caught them on that. So they are a predator as well, but you're going to have the best result bottom fishing for them. And worms are great. Hot dogs are great. Number one bait for them, shrimp. I know everybody out there is screaming, chicken livers! And chicken livers are great when action is fast and you put the liver on and within 15 minutes you're either taking a fish off the hook or putting another piece on. The thing about chicken livers is they hit the water and they start egressing all of the blood and everything out of them. And once they turn that kind of mealy looking color, they just don't really attract fish much anymore. So they're fine for what they are. Shrimp work. The thing with shrimp is they get soft, especially if it's been frozen and those little ones pick them off. I do salted shrimp. Again, there's a video that's in the notes today. You can look at that video and see how to do it. It's basically you take raw shrimp, put it in a bucket or a tub or something like that and cover it with just regular plain old salt for a couple days. And you pick it out, kind of dry it off, throw it in a Ziploc bag. It'll last a year easy at that point. It makes it like shrimp jerky, but the smell and flavor is still there. And, you know, if you're going for like channel cats or whatever, or bigger catfish, whole shrimp, bullheads, usually I'm cutting them in half to thirds, depending on the size of the shrimp. And, man, that just works so good. If you try it, you probably won't use anything else. I mean, really, I've caught four, five, six on one piece. This guy here says chicken titties soaked and coated in cherry or grape Kool-Aid. Okay, that works. He means chicken breasts, and that works fine. What also works good for Cavish Channels and Bullheads both are hot dogs in Kool-Aid or Jell-O. Jell-O's always worked better for me. Something about strawberry Jell-O. And you take hot dogs and cut them into bait-sized pieces, throw them in a Ziploc bag, and put strawberry Jell-O on them. It's not just the flavor and color enhancement. The Jell-O, and I bet Kool-Aid does too. I've never used it, but I bet it does. It does something to cure it like the salt does for the shrimp, and it just stays on the hook like 100 times better. But hot dogs are one of the, I don't know what it is, man, but Catfish Channels and Bullheads. I've never caught a blue, never caught a flathead on a hot dog. I've caught, I mean, 6-8 pound channel catfish on hot dogs. And you don't have to worry, but a big channel, you have to worry about it falling off because they just take it. But bullheads will, like I said, pick the shit out of it. And so will little bait fish and stuff too. That's why curing it works so good. The thing about bullheads that I really want people to take to heart is they're often extremely overpopulated in park ponds. And one way or another, taking large numbers of them out of that pond is actually the only way to fix the problem. And so this idea that if nobody keeps them, then they'll all grow up to be big is nonsense. Because they don't eat their own poop, and everyone in there is competing with every other one in there for everything that there is to eat. And they're scavengers. Okay, fine. How much do you think there is to scavenge? If you put on a diving mask, right, in a air tank, and go in the average park pond, how much dead do you think you're going to see laying at the bottom of the ponds? Not much. It all gets scarfed up as soon as something dies or gets killed or whatever. So there's only so much feed for them. They'll only get so much up into the skinny water to chase minnows and stuff like that. Bluegill and stuff, when they're little, they try to stay the hell out of that deeper water because they know things out there will eat them. A lot of those ponds don't have many bass, and bass will eat little blue bullheads, but not that have. They have spikes. They are very well defended. What eats a little bullhead is a big channel cat or a big flathead catfish. And if they're not in that pond, then not much in there eats them, and their survival rate's insane. They're actually a fish that kind of stays with its fry for a while to protect it. They actually will have their fry go into their mouth like a tilapia. And then once they finally leave, you'll see these black clouds that looks like giant tadpoles swimming around. Then it's well, not really giant tadpoles if they're talking about, you know, bullfrog tadpoles. They're not that big, but they're bigger than like the little black tadpoles, like twice that size. You see it swimming around, and it's schools of these things with not much eating them. And then they have too much competition. And then if these cities and parks, and a lot of them down here in Texas do this, they'll once a year stock 1,100 in a less than 1 acre pond, 1,100 channel cat fingerlings that are about 6 inches long. And at that stage, that channel cat can eat that bullhead. The bullhead is more likely to eat the channel cat. And that channel cat is not yet a major predator where it's eating like larger sunfish. And there's no shad in that little lake, that little pond. So now that channel cat's competing with that bullhead at the exact same level. And the bullhead is actually more aggressive at that age and will grow faster. So those channel cats, you'll catch channel cats in there a year after they stock them. They're 12, 13 inches. And yeah, I always said that they're kind of thin, but they look deformed. Their head is too big for their body. Look like a fucking eel. And the only way to, Karens be damned, the only way to fix that is to get them damn fish out of there. And some of these ponds, they need to be removed by the thousands to bring into balance. I had a buddy one time. We targeted a specific pond like this, and our weapon of choice was a hatchet and a wood block. And we would go out, and any bullheads that were big enough to be worth cleaning, so like 11 inches-ish, we would take home, and everything that was small, everything went on the chopping block, got chopped into two or three pieces, and chunked back into the water. It took about 2 years of doing that before the average bullhead we were catching was of reasonable size. And I mean, they just, the way they can breed and reproduce, you're helping. is what I'm trying to say. All right, enough of my soapboxing on that. Again, the salted shrimp is just a fantastic bait for them. General tactics with catfish, period. Fish the bottom with slip rigs. And by slip rig, I mean, you know, use a weight that you can actually thread line through. That's an egg sinker if you're on the video. So line goes through your weight, and then you'll have a snap swivel or a swivel and a leader. And that way, when you cast this out and you pull your rod back and your line's tight against the weight, the bait is free. And when the fish takes it, they don't feel this weight at all. It pulls straight through against the tip of the rod to set the hook. And that's kind of your go-to tactic. I really like these egg sinkers for that. And I also like these casting sinkers that are more like they're kind of shaped like a coin. And if you're listening to the audio, you can come to right about 55-ish minutes in, 56 minutes in, and you can see these weights that I'm holding up if you want to. But it doesn't really matter as long as they'll slide. And it's a really good idea when bottom fishing for catfish to use enough weight to keep that line taut for the conditions. I mean, if you have wind and current or what have you, because if you do that and you use the kind of hooks I'm going to recommend to you, and you get a catfish takes that and pulls against that rod tip, usually you don't have to do anything except pick up and reel it in. No hook set, no nothing. And if that line's slack, that doesn't happen. So I'll tend to go with a little bit more weight than necessary. Another little hack on slip weights in general when bait fishing, not like doing a Texas rig with a rubber worm. A lot of times the hole that's in the weight, especially when you get in like the sandbag and coin style and pyramid sinkers, and they have this little loop up on them, sometimes that swivel will get inside there. It'll manage to get in there unless it's a dramatic difference in the size of the swivel in the hole. Sometimes it'll just jam up. Sometimes it'll actually get past it. Sometimes that'll cause a tangle or a twist, and that's not good. But if you take a small split shot, definitely bigger than the hole though, and put that small split shot right above the swivel, then you get none of that. So that's a little additional hack that I wanted to give you today. You also want to, in my opinion, circle hooks are the way to go. And Gamatsu, and this is not catfish. This is in general bait fishing. I use Gamatsu circle hooks. They call them octopus hooks. They don't just have that typical circle hook standard, that the point itself is literally like kind of bent over at the end. They are super sharp and they cost more than like generics or even like Mustad or Eagle Claw or whatever. The hookup ratio versus everything else I've tried is absolutely insane. We were just using them down at the Texas coast, me and JR and David. And we were down there just surf fishing for whatever. We were catching croaker and whiting and black drum and whatever. The hookup ratios were insane. And they kept asking me, like if they just hit it once and they're hooked. It's those Gamatsu octopus. I have a link in the show notes today. You may have to do a little pecking around to find the size that you're looking for in them. And remember with hooks, if it's something like a 1/0, 2/0, 4/0, those are big. That's where you see like 4/0 as a 4/0. That's a very big hook. Okay, so just keep that in mind when you're sizing hooks to it. I tend to fish for bullheads with about a number 2 octopus hook and larger fish more like somewhere between a 2/0 and a 6/0, depending on where I'm at, where I'm going, and what have you on that. Chumming works really well. Again, range cubes are super effective. You got to be careful of the rabbit sheriff with some of the things I'm going to tell you next. And you got to be careful of the rabbit sheriff anyway with chumming in general. In Texas, chum your ass off. No one cares. No one gives a rip. It is completely legal. It is totally acceptable. There is no problem chumming in Texas at all. Pennsylvania, the rabbit sheriff will cite you, put you in rabbit sheriff jail, which basically get a fine for chumming. I mean, I saw a guy one time, game warden's being a dick, but he basically just threw a handful of bait out, like old bait out of his pocket. And then when he threw his rod back in, the guy was standing there not in uniform, and he came up and cited him for chumming. I've not seen that ever happen again or before, but It happens. So be careful chumming in general. But what I'm about to tell you is illegal in Texas if the game warden wants to be a dick. When I used to fish for white bass, I would take them home to clean them. And basically you just filleting them and skin off, and then you end up with as much carcass as you end up with fillet. In fact, more. Well, I'd throw them in a garbage bag and throw the garbage bag in the freezer. And then when it came time for the garbage to be taken out, I'd put them out the night before so they didn't stink. And I got to thinking, wait a minute, that's chum. So I started taking those frozen clumps of white bass and chunking them under the bridge where I fished for channel cats. And it worked really good. And they sink beautifully, and then they slowly melt down there. That's illegal. It's not illegal because you're chumming. It's illegal because it's a game fish in the state of Texas. It's been processed and is on the water. And that's just one of those letter of the law retard things. And the reason they do that is you have limits to size by species. And when they're checking what you caught and what you've kept, they want to be able to measure it and identify it fully. So once you've done that, it makes that more difficult. So they wanted to close a loophole of people claiming something that ain't true. I've never seen anybody cited for anything like that in my life, though. And I think unless you were a complete dick, you probably wouldn't have a problem doing that. But just know your laws. So if you're breaking your laws, you can take proper precautions. I'm not for immoral shit, but some things that are illegal are not immoral. And throwing those chunks of, you know, waste back into water where they'll be consumed and utilized versus in a landfill, I think it's actually a better use of the resource for everybody. Night fishing is highly touted. Fish for catfish at night. Here's my experience. From about 30 minutes before the sun comes up to about the first hour or 2 hours of daylight, really decent. In the evening, 2 hours before dark to about 2 hours after dark. And after that, that nocturnal activity drops. I'm not saying you can't catch a catfish at 2 o'clock in the morning. I've done it. But we've had the best results. And this is Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas. Primary areas I've fished heavily for catfish. And it ain't changed. It's never changed for me. Early morning. And I'd say with bullheads and these park ponds and stuff, that's up till about lunchtime, 11 o'clock, 11:30, and they start to really go down middle of the day when that sun's up hot and high. And then, you know, if it's going to get dark at 8 o'clock as you get into late spring, about 6. So from 6 to 8 and then maybe 8 to 9, that's like magic time, especially bullheads and shadow cats is when that has seemed to be best for me. And then bullheads, a lot of times, even when they seem like the bite's gone down, if there's like a big old oak tree casting shade in the water and it's a smaller pond and that's the one dark, cool spot, guess where everybody goes, right? Imagine you have a playroom for kids, but there's one couch in the playroom and it's bolted to the ground where they can't move it. And there's a TV with cartoons in front of that couch. You put 20 kids in there. There's nothing else for them to do. They don't have their phones. When you come back in 15 minutes, those kids are all be piled up on top of each other on that couch watching that TV. That's what culverts, shaded areas, deep holes, those cats will head in there. And if there's enough of them there and you throw a little chum, you catch them right in the middle of the smack of the day. I've caught limits of channels 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon in Texas in August. Under a bridge, in the shade of the bridge, up against the column, chumming. That's how I did it, right? The most active times, again, those 2 hours in the a.m., 2 hours after dark, some of the most productive baits, stinks and punch baits, work really, like Danny King's is my go-to. Again, cut bait, what swims in the water you're fishing in tends to be best. If there's no shad, I'm not saying they won't eat shad, but if they're what they usually eat is bluegill, and bluegill's legal to use as bait, which it is in Texas. Some other states, they have size limits and they're not legal for bait. But shiner, whatever's there, will tend to work really good for bait for you. Shrimp, again, salted is the way to go, especially with smaller fish. It's just way more difficult for them to steal those shrimp once they've been salted. And then live bait, shad, small bluegills, et cetera. Other catfish, when you're, especially when you're targeting blues, or when you're channeling targeting flatheads. The Trinity River here that runs right through Fort Worth. If you find a cutout bank and you're there at the right time and you're rigged right and you drop an 8-inch bullhead in there long enough, you're probably pulling out a flathead. I mean, they just like those things a lot. I do want to talk just a little bit here about some unconventional methods, or very conventional if you're a cat fisherman yourself. But these include jug fishing, limb lining, and trot lining. The way you know somebody doesn't know nothing about fishing is when they tell you they're going to put out a trout line. That there's no such thing as a trout are not legal to fish for that way, and we don't call it a trout line. It's a trot line, like a dog or a horse trots, right? A trot line. So jug fishing can be as simple as old bottle with line talk tied around it, which is why they call it jug fishing. Milk jugs work really well. What I've found that makes really great jugs that are easy to put away and deploy is pool noodles. Pool noodles make a fantastic jug, and 9 of them fit perfectly in a milk crate. Wrapped in the line that you're running on and wraps up right around them. I use tarred bank line as my main line. I use swivels because cats go into like a death roll like a freaking crocodile when they're caught, and that swivel keeps that line from getting tangled up. I run 2 hooks per jug, one almost on the bottom and one up about 18 inches above that, little side loops, and then I use mono to the hooks. So it's a main line is a tarred bank line, but the actual terminal tackle is on mono, and the mono I do with a snap swivel, and that way when you pull that fish in, especially if you're running like a John boat or something and your buddy's driving, you bring that line in, you get that fish up, you undo the snap swivel and hook and line and all into the box, and you have your next baited lines just hanging on the side of the boat. You take it off, snap swivel on, redeploy next jug. I'm the only one I know that I'm sure other people have done it. I'm the only one I know that I've ever heard talk about doing that way. And I came up with it on my own, even if other people do it. It's a really slick way to go. There's a limb lining is exactly what it sounds like. Usually creeks are best for this, creeks and rivers, cutout banks, etc. You find a green limb, you trim some stuff off of it, you tie a line to it, and you got your weight and your bait and your hook in the water. And that way, when that fish goes to take it, if you were on something hard, like you're tied off to a stake or something, it's dead, you know, it's dead stop. And if it's a bigger fish, they're likely to break the line. You get a lot of misses and stuff like that. When you have that green stem, that fish is fighting that springy stem, you'd be amazed at how big of a fish can get on a branch about as big as your pinky and not break it. And that limb will hold that fish because it doesn't get tired and it doesn't ever pull back. And eventually that fish just kind of sits there like, fuck, what's wrong? Until he finds he heft around, then he's going to find out later when you come by. That works really well. Trot lines, that's where you have like a long main line and multiple drops. And a lot of trot liners have a special clip you can buy. And each of your lines that drop off the main line with bait, they clip, they're a fast clip on and off. That is where I got the idea for the way I do jug fishing. Even though I'm the only one I've seen do it that way. And it doesn't make sense to have them big clips like a trot line has. But a trot line, the line's above the water level. All these methods work. All of them have different regulations in different areas is what's legal. A limb line in Texas is legal. A yo-yo reel, which is a reel that you hang off like a link, but as the fish comes in, the reel keeps retracting cable. They use like a little thin steel cable. That's illegal. It doesn't make any sense, but it's illegal here. It's not illegal in a lot of other places. Some places jug fishing is legal. Some places it's not. In Texas, every trot line, limb line, or jug line has got to have a tag on it with personal information. And they have to be checked at least once. I think it's every 12 or 24 hours, something like that. So make sure you know what the law is, where you are, and you're either following it or at least aware that you're breaking it, and to be on alert for what that might mean. Don't FAFO with the rabbit sheriff. It's just easier to do what you're supposed to do. Or fish in fully private land where the rabbit sheriff's not allowed to come. One or the other. And if a river runs through it, the rabbit sheriff can come down the river. Because I can and you can, so he certainly can too. Just know this, right? I talked about a way that's legal in Louisiana, and I don't know where else it's illegal or legal, but it's not legal in Texas. And it looks a lot like trot lining, or more like long lining. And I'm going to try to find the video and add it, because this is old coon ass down there in Louisiana doing this, and it is amazing. You take bottles, like big jugs, like antifreeze jugs and stuff like that. You cut the top off of them, and the hole's pretty small looking. You'd be surprised what can fit in there. And there's just one long line, and you do this during spawning season, and you lay this line out with all these jugs in it, and you give it time, and you come back through with your boat, and you pull the line up, and as you pull the line up, there's catfish in the jugs. They go in there to breed. A lot of times, there's two fish in there at once. And the weird thing is, it only takes a few days for these eggs to hatch once they're fertilized. And you see this guy dumping them out. He's showing the camera. There's loads of fertilized eggs in that jug. And so these fish are coming in, laying and fertilizing. And channels don't hang out with their babies the way bullheads do for very long. So then another pair comes in and does it. And another pair comes in and does it. So even though you're harvesting the adults, you're actually providing breeding habitat for the next generation at the same time. And no bait. And I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't see it with my own two eyes. And the video's old enough. It ain't AI. It's pretty freaking cool. For some reason, that's illegal in Texas. The other thing you might want to do when it comes to all these limits and everything else is you might want to look into what does it cost to get a commercial license in your state. In Texas, there's a big advantage to commercial license for saltwater for some species. There isn't in freshwater that I can see. The limit's the same. The only thing the commercial license does is give you the right to sell the fish. And I don't know that there's much money in that. But, you know, your state might have an exponential limit increase for not much more money, because a commercial freshwater fishing license in Texas, you have to buy the consumer one, but the commercial one costs about the same amount of money. So you have like double the cost only to do it. But it just, I don't see much advantage to it, but I thought I'd throw that in there too. Cleaning catfish. Let's talk about that for a minute. Don't make it hard. Don't nail it to the tree and cut down the back and just stop it. It's a fish like any other fish. If it's a big enough fish to make filleting make sense, fillet it. Flip the flay over and cut the damn skin off the other side like any other fish on planet Earth. Period. The end. Done. I don't know where this came from. All these weird ass ways people are doing fish. It's a fish. That's all it is fish. Now, I will say also on bigger catfish, and when I say bigger, I mean you get up 18, 20 inches, they're big enough to do this with. The belly meat is really good on them. So after you fillet them, cut the belly off, like right at the end of the ribs, cut that belly off. And in a bigger one, you'll cut that into two pieces right down the midline of the belly. Then lay it down and skin it off just like you do a regular fish. There's a little bit of membrane on the inside, ain't worth it. Those are delicious fried. And if you go to the store and you go to the deli and they're selling fish in the deli area, you know, you got the lobster and the shrimp and the catfish and the salmon and all that. And you see something called catfish nuggets. And they're like half the price of the fillets. It's exactly what it is the belly meat off of farm channel cats. Smaller fish like bullheads. If you are on the audio only, I apologize that you can't see what I'm about to show the audience here. This is a short and cut down version of this thing called shucking. And this is a new shucking method that I'm using. I used to use an old method where you went back to the tab on the back of the skin. This works really, really good. You take a knife like a fillet knife and go right behind the top dorsal fin. You cut right underneath the spine, a little bit forward, down to the head. And then you break the head and neck off each other and pull out the body. And in one hand, you have a skinless but bone-in body of the fish with the guts mostly gone. In this case, you're going to see he ended up with the swim bladder, but that's not a big deal. You suck when he pulls it out in one hand. But the other hand, you'll have the head, the guts, and the skin. And this is really cool. Watch this go down here. And again, I apologize to those of you that won't be able to see what this guy's talking about when he's doing it.
Underneath this fin, cut up to the head, a little slit. Then you're going to break the head in the neck like this. Then you're going to take a pair of pliers and pull the meat out of the carcass. So here we go. Just like that. Then you angle it down a little bit. And you snap. Then you pull. Just like that. Boom. Except we got the air bladder with it too on accident, but that's okay. You can just remove that really quick. And there you go. You got a bullhead cleaned. Just a matter of seconds.
You know, that's faster than I can do a dove. That's because he took his time to show you that. They're incredibly fast to clean that way. And then all of a sudden, all those little bullheads are worth keeping. And we're going to talk about cooking them here in a second. But when you do bullheads that way, whether you batter them and fry them or pan fry them or grill them, put three little cuts on both sides of them, kind of down to the backbone on the flat side, just gentle cuts into them. It helps render that fat, and you crisp them up a lot more when you do that. They're damn good. Now, really big fish, again, I recommend that you consider with your bigger – I'm not that big. I'm talking like, again, 6 pounds and up. The staking method – where if you've ever seen salmon staked out where the bone is still in them and they're kind of cross cut, that's what this is. That's again, that's about a 7 pound channel cat. And the last piece of the tail there, if you look on the video, it'll be to your right. In there, you'll see like the tail piece. And I actually had to skin that piece because you get to where you get to where you're too flat to make it worth standing up on end. And so that when you take a pair of pliers and yank the skin off before you cook it, if you look at the rest of the steaks, there's the skin on the outside. You just cook that catfish steak. And when it's done, that skin just pulls right off. So there's no real reason to worry about it. There's not much skin ratio to flesh ratio in that model right there. Those are delicious. And I want to talk a little bit about cooking them now. So yeah, dredge and fry is delicious. Throw them in a zip, throw your chunks of catfish, boneless chunks of catfish in a Ziploc bag. Take your favorite hot sauce and give them a good wet down with it. Massage it in, throw some Louisiana fish fry. That's a brand in there. Shake it up and fry it. Sure, it's good. It's not keto, but it's good. I've never had a fried fish that I didn't like anyway, let alone fried catfish. But it's kind of pedestrian. Everybody does it, and it's not the best. It's not the best for you nutritionally. Like you went out, you found this fish, you caught it, you cleaned it, you took care of it, you bring it home and you fried it in oil with industrial crap, right? So they are really great, as I said, directly grilled. And I think people are afraid to put fish on the grill, especially without like you can wrap it in foil and add some butter and some seasoning and just kind of almost like a buttered poached thing. I don't mean that. Salt, pepper, whatever season you want, nice hot grill, straight on the grill like you're grilling a piece of friggin' ribeye. Catfish will hold together for you, especially larger ones staked out like that picture I showed you. And when you cook catfish that way, and then the bone-in bullheads, like I showed you that guy clean it, they hold together beautifully as well. That little bit of grease that comes out goes down and hits them flames, and those flames spit up, and you get a little bit of char on it. Last time I made just bullheads, I made 4 for me and 4 for my wife. Well, Dorothy took 3 of the 4 that were cooked for her, and said, I'm going to start with this. So I ate my four and I was still hungry. I was like, are you going to eat? When I went to get that fourth one from her, she about stabbed me in the hand with a fork. And that's all was salt, pepper on the grill. It's amazing what simplicity will do for you in a lot of situations. But they can also handle the fact that they'll hold together on a grill like that, where if you were to throw some in there like a piece of largemouth bass or something, if you do it just right, you get the temperature, you can do it, but there's a lot more danger of it kind of coming apart on you. Catfish is a more firm fish, and it holds together better, and that means that we can cook it a little bit longer without it getting mushy. So we can do some things that you may not want to do with a more delicate fish. One of those is a blackened hard sear. So Chef Paul Perdome's blackened redfish seasoning on catfish, huh? Yes. Especially your kind of larger fillet size cats, your 18, 24 inch cats that you fillet, you just towel them off and roll them in, give them a good coating of that Chef Paul's, get your pan nice and hot, a little bit of oil down, lay them in that, hit both sides of it, do that outside because it's going to smoke. Oh yeah. Is it as good as redfish done that way? No. Is it close? Yeah, really close. I'd say striped bass and catfish both are just amazing that way. And they're two fish that can handle it. Where I've tried to do it with white bass, and they're not meaty enough. They just want to get that black sear on them. You end up overcooking them. It's a thin, small fillet, and the fish is more delicate. So striped bass and catfish, and all catfish work good with that stuff. Another one is like you can do like a gumbo. Now, you don't want to leave it in there like, you know, when you do a gumbo and you throw some blue crabs in there and you're really cooking them down for flavor of the broth. I'm saying that goes in at the end, but they can handle, you know, some time in there simmering. And they can handle like you made the gumbo, you put the gumbo away, you reheat the gumbo the next day, it doesn't go to mush. They make good curries and they make damn good stir fry. And if you want to learn a lot about cooking catfish a bunch of ways by a redneck, dig a dude named Wade Fishes, WadeFishz. And go watch some of his short videos. I don't know what other platforms he's on. I'm imagining he's on TikTok, but he's definitely on Facebook. This dude's really interesting. Seems like a few years ago, his whole life had gone to shit. He's rebuilt his whole life as a content creator. And he's a cool dude. And he's, if you've ever seen a video where like crank that, right? And the Coleman stove and all, get the meat. That's the guy I'm talking about. He does some pretty, I've seen catfish pot pie. Is an example of things he's done. And that's the Deli Shoes guy, too, if you know who I'm talking about. I'm not saying that everything he's ever made's come out great, even in his own estimation. Or, like, he said, that's fine. I'm like, but a lot of stuff that dude makes, he gets really creative because he catches blues and channel cats. Also catches some other stuff, but that's his mainstay is cats. So he tries to create variety in the different ways that he cooks it. And he's really worth it. I'll put a link to him in the notes today, too, as well, if I remember. But in the end, you know, again, stir fry, soups, curries, like you're unlimited what you can do. It doesn't always have to be roll it in cornmeal and fry it, even though you should do that once in a while just because. Catfish can be cheap to catch, fun to chase, and delicious on the table. And there's probably somewhere near you that you can go out and you put some in the cooler and bring them home, put them on the table. Don't be afraid of them. Don't be intimidated by them. A couple other things. Number one, I want to teach you one of the biggest secrets I've learned for getting stink off your hands. You wash your hands with salt. Just plain old everyday salt. Get your hands wet. Go ahead and wash them with soap, right? Get the gooey shit off and all. And then throw some salt and rub your hands down like it's an abrasive, which it is, with salt. And if it's a really bad stink, some lemon juice. And then rinse that off, and that'll get your hands stink. But it'll also a lot of times get that kind of weird feeling that fish gets on your hands, get that feeling off. You kind of dry all that goo up for you. But it's nothing to, you know, carry a rag or two with you when you fish. So when you take one off, if you constantly, when you're done with that fish and you get your rod back out or whatever, if you wipe your hands down with a rag, it won't build up and it won't be that big of a deal. Get a good pair of pliers, needle nose, or a good pair of like Dr. Slick is what I use, a little hemostat type tool. Is like an advanced, a much better, beefier version of like a first aid hemostats with some other functionality built into them. They're on my website. If you just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, put in Slick, S-L-I-C-K, you'll find what I'm talking about for dehooking and stuff like that. But I mean, the thing is, you don't need a $30,000 bass boat. You don't need $800 worth of tackle. You know, your average everyday medium action, light action, even ultralight action rod, we're talking bullheads, $5 worth of tackle, $5 worth of bait shrimp, $5 worth of chum rage cubes and some weights, and you can start catching fish really, really quick. And if you're not sure where to go, I'll try to look it up for you, but I did a show a couple of years ago about how to find little places to fish using Google Maps and stuff. I'll try to remember to get that for you to as well. But if you just search for fishing and start scrolling through the shows we've done on it, it was probably 2 years ago. And it's really not hard to pull up Google Maps, look for blue, zone into places where you can see there's access. Switch over to satellite view. You can even get street view in a lot of places to see like there's a bridge, there's a place to park. And then I just did a segment right before the vacation on an app called Fishbrain. It is a paid app for it to be useful at all, but it's like $80 a year and you can try it for free. And if it ain't going to work for you, cancel it. I kept it. I'm found a ton of spots around me that I would have never found without it. There's a lot of places I found that like, I'm not sure if you're allowed to fish there. And then when you see like there's 117 people documenting catches there, you can fish there. And if you are given any grief by, you know, a cop or something, why are you here? Well, I this app and all these people are fishing this place and there was no sign that said I'm not supposed to fish here. So why wouldn't I fish here? You know, it gives you a little bit more of a nice conversation, I guess, when you have that. Anyway, guys, I appreciate it. I didn't see a lot of questions come through, but again, I'm the one-eyed man all by myself on days like this. But let me see what I do have. A couple things here. Games Von James, $5 super chat. Thanks, brother. You just mentioned you'd be sharing some cooking tips, which was my question. Just wanted to say thanks for the inspiration. I think we did that then, but thank you for the $5. And maybe we'll do another show on cooking fish in general. Maybe next week or the week after or something like that. Then I have a user, IC2UG, some other shit. What are some of the best ways to use the remains of processing catfish, chicken food, plant fertilizer, et cetera? Okay. So like I said, using it as chum is really useful. If you have black soldier fly bins in your summer, they will take it down to almost nothing, except you're going to be left with bones. They won't completely take and get rid of the bones for you. So then you still got to do something with the bones, but then those can be just kind of buried or whatever as a calcium source. So they're good for that. You can definitely make fish stock from catfish. But what I'd want to do with that is, you know, when you do a fillet and you come off with the skin, throw that skin away. I've seen people make fish stock using catfish with the whole head. With the skin, but the skin get that slime really is kind of gnarly. So then I would whack the head and use that. The other thing you can do is just throw all the carcasses in and boil it really down and make a fish emulsion for fertilizer. So that's another thing that you can do with it. I usually just throw them into compost. And when they get into the hot compost period, there's pretty much nothing left of them after that. my wife just texted me something that I can't show you. Not anything like that. Just, I don't logistically know how I would show. It's a bag of potato chips and I don't know why she sent it. Bacon grilled cheese. I guess that would be the reason in itself. Anyway, I really appreciate you guys tuning in real quick. We did talk about cooking quite a bit today and that brings me to our item of the day. But you thought it was going to be directly fishing related. It's not. I brought these to you right about the end of the year last year. These carbon steel skillets by a company called Merton and Stork. I have been recommending Lodge cookware for a long time. And it's because when you get into carbon steel cookware and you get into really high-end stuff that's is much better than Lodge, the expense to me doesn't warrant it. You know, like $200 for a pan that's a little bit better than a $50 pan, I'm going to go with the $50 pan. But when the $50 pan and the other $50 pan, you know, one of them is much better, I'm going to go with the better $50 pan. These Merton and Stork, they're made in Germany. The milling on them is much better done than Lodge. And I don't even think Lodge is being made in the United States anymore from some stuff that I read. I haven't really checked it yet, but that would make sense if it's the case, because Lodge was always an American company. So if Lodge is manufacturing in China or some shit, now I don't get it. But it would explain some of the quality issues that have been going to show up. These are dead level, milled beautifully, heavy rivets, heavy handles, and they will cost you a dollar more or less than a large carbon steel skillet of the same size on the same day. The prices fluctuate a little up and down, but they're always within a couple bucks of each other. It ain't even worth considering a Lodge if you can get this. It is so much better. I can't even begin and describe how much better it is. And if you pick one up, if you haven't done so yet, since I've been recommending them, it will become your go-to cooking skillet. They come pre-seasoned, really great when they show up that way, but they just get better the more that you use them and take care of them like any other carbon steel skillet, and you'll be good to go. With that, guys, thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate y'all. No, we're not going to talk about any of the current events going on. If somebody got their ass shot in Minnesota or Michigan or somewhere protesting ICE and some lady tried to run over an officer and he shot her ass, we'll see what comes of that. I'm not going there. I'm not talking about Venezuela. I'm not talking about Greenland, none of that shit today. We're talking about fishing. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you want to hear fear porn or whatever, go listen to this Fox News. I'm sure they'll give you plenty. I'll catch you tomorrow with Expert Counsel Q&A show.
Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.